Maseches Tamai, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Aleph, 4:1. We had said in previous Mishnayos that one who's not strict and hasn't formally accepted upon himself to be ne'eman, reliable regarding tithes, is not believed, and that stuff which comes from him has a status of Demai. Here the Mishnah will discuss an interesting exception to this rule. It says, Lokech peras mamisha enu ne'eman al ha-maisres. You purchase foodstuffs from someone who is not relied upon regarding maisres, so that means what you purchase is Demai. But now, v'shachach la'asron, you forgot to tithe the Demai tithes from that produce. And now Shabbos is rolled in, and you have a problem, because you can't eat that food on Shabbos, and you can't tithe that food on Shabbos. You can't eat it because it's not yet kosher, so to speak. It hasn't had the tithes removed, and you have the requirement of Demai to remove those certain things, the Trumas Meiser and the Kedusha of Meiser Sheni. And on the other hand, you're not allowed to do the tithing of foods on Shabbos because it resembles tikkun mana, like repairing something, and repairing things on Shabbos is asra because the malacha makwa patish. So rabbinically, one can't tithe and fix his food to be edible on Shabbos. So you're kind of stuck. And the problem is, it's Shabbos, and there's a mitzvah to be mechabed Shabbos, to honor Shabbos properly and have proper foodstuffs, and therefore you're in a bind and sort of between a rock and a hard place, halachli, because on the one hand, you can't eat this food, and on the other hand, you need to have food for Shabbos for the sake of the mitzvah. So here the rabbis were lenient, and they said, v'shol v'shabbos, if you ask that person who sold it to you on Shabbos, yochel al piv, you may eat that food if he assures you, the seller assures you that the tithes were properly taken. You recall that when it comes to Demai, most people do tithe, and people aren't liars. It's just that a significant minority of Amhe Aretz do not tithe properly, and therefore you have the halachas midrabanan to tithe this food, which is Demai. But because of one and perhaps two factors, the rabbis were lenient in this current case. The first reason why they're lenient, as I said, is because it's Shabbos, and Chazal, the rabbis, want you to have food on Shabbos and not have to go without, and that would be sort of an affront to the Kedusha and the covet of Shabbos. The second thing is that, as the Bartanura speaks out, people are especially hesitant to lie on Shabbos because they have a reverence for Shabbos, and the truth is the halacha applies the same for Yom Tov. They would be particularly careful not to lie on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And therefore, we're going to be lenient and we're going to allow the person who purchased this Demai to rely on the assurances of the seller on Shabbos because A, he needs the food for Shabbos and rabbis want that food on Shabbos, and B, because there's a special added credence to the assurances of the salesperson on Shabbos because we don't think he would lie on Shabbos. And therefore, Yochel al Piv, you can rely on his assurances and eat that Demai without further tithing on Shabbos. However, Chashcha Moti Shabbos, once Shabbos is over and now it's become dark and it's Saturday night, Moti Shabbos, Lo Yochel Adji Aser, you no longer can rely upon the assurance, the retroactive assurance or the current assurance for that matter, of the salesperson. You now have to tithe that food. So we're sort of backtracking. We're saying on Shabbos, his assurances can be believed, but come Moti Shabbos, they can't be believed anymore. One has to now fix up the food. The reason is because, as you'll recall, there was more than one factor. It wasn't just that we don't think he'll lie on Shabbos, but also because we want to find some accommodations so a person could have food on Shabbos. But come Motzi Shabbos, we no longer need to accommodate that, and therefore we will not allow the purchaser to rely on those assurances until he does what he can to address the mitzvah of Demai, which is to now tie the food properly. According to Rambam, interestingly, in the Yad, Hilchos Maaser, Perek Yud Beis, Halacha Beis, you actually have to retroactively take the tithes of the food that was also eaten on Shabbos. This, of course, wouldn't have any... You can't retroactively fix what went wrong if something went wrong, but at least it puts some sort of economic disincentive for, quote-unquote, accidentally forgetting, because this leniency only applies for one who did forget. One who purposely didn't tithe and left it for Shabbos cannot rely on this leniency. The mission continues, Lo Matzau, if you can't or didn't find the person who sold it to you, Amalo Acher, and someone else, a third party, She'enu Ne'eman al Maisras, who also is equally not particularly relied upon regarding tithing, meaning he's also an Amha Aretz, but this third party says Mu'usarinhen, so he gives the assurance that he knows for a fact that the food was tithed, then the halacha is the same, Ochel al Piv, You can rely on this third party, just like you could rely on the farmer, and both have equal ne'amanus in this regard and can be relied upon. The pasha says you have to first try to find the horse and get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, the original salesman. But if that's impossible, because you want to know food on Shabbos, we'll let you rely on a third party, a different person. The Rambam makes no mention this, the halacha, he says you can rely equally on the original salesperson or some other person who can assure you that it was tithed. Again, but chashcha motzi Shabbos, once Shabbos is over and it's dark on Saturday night, lo yochel ad she'aser, again, you no longer can eat that food until you now go and tithe it properly. So they're on equal footing. That's the first case of the Mishnah. The second case of the Mishnah is totally unrelated to that first case, but the principles of work are very similar. The case here is, what's about trumas ma'aser shel demai shechazer lemkoma? You have trumas ma'aser of demai, that is to say, you took that 1% of your demai off. You separated 10% as ma'aser rishon, which you'll just end up eating, but you said a tenth of that 10%, which is the trumas ma'aser, or 1% of the total, is your trumas ma'aser that's going to the kohen. Now, things that have a status of truma, which is both truma gadola as well as trumas ma'aser and other things as well, they aren't like regular foods or regular isser that gets mixed in your food. The requirement when it comes to trumas ma'aser and truma gadola, as well as challah, etc., is that you need to have that if you have one part in 100, it's still the mixture is forbidden. The exact amount requirement is a bit of machlokas tanaim, whether it's more than 99 parts or if it's a full 100 parts of non-truma against the truma. But whatever the case, if you have exactly 1% of trumas ma'aser flowing back in, that mixture is usher, and it's called meduma. So now you're sort of stuck in the same way that happens to you as the previous case in the Mishnah. Here you've got a mixture called meduma. You have, you know, a full 1% of trumas ma'aser in your food, and you couldn't eat any of it. The halacha would be you'd have to take that whole mixture of 100 parts and give it all to a kohen, since only a kohen could eat it, and you could charge him for the 99 parts that aren't his, illegally. But in any case, let's say you want to eat your food, and now you're sort of stuck. You can't, because your trumas ma'aser fell back in, and the whole food has become asher's meduma. But remember, we're talking about demai here. When it comes to demai, there's a good reason to believe that most amoratim do tie their food properly, removing the trumas ma'aser. Just a significant minority don't. Then you have the rabbinic requirement to sort of tie that, if you will, a second time because of that doubt. But here there's a tremendous loss being involved. All your food's going to be ruined and inedible. So the question is, can you rely now on the assurances of the original salesperson who tells you, yes, I assure you what I gave you, which you called demai, I'm telling you was tithed properly and there's no trumas ma'aser inside of it. So the trumas ma'aser you removed the second time, quote unquote, as the trumas ma'aser of demai was actually not trumas ma'aser, it was just gola-fashioned chulin, regular edible food, and what fell back in didn't render your food forbidden. So if the original salesperson can assure you that what fell back in wasn't midoraisa truma or trumas ma'aser, just a rabbinic requirement of demai, can you rely upon that person and eat the food, or must you give away all to the kohen? The Mishnah says, like the previous case, trumas ma'aser shel demai. If you separate trumas ma'aser of demai, shechazlum koma, but it falls back into the main mixture, it's all mixed up now. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri Omer. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri holds, af b'chol, even not on Shabbos. So we're not relying upon the Shabbos, the ema, the fear of Shabbos being a factor here. Even on a regular Tuesday afternoon, sholo, you could ask the person who should have done the tithing. V'ochol alpiv, and if he assures you that he did remove trumas ma'aser already, then you can rely on his assurances and eat that food when the trumas ma'aser falls back in. The reason for this leniency is not because of Shabbos at all, or because the fear of Shabbos and lying. It's that the Am Haaretz, who's giving the assurance, understands full well that the penalty for eating trumas ma'aser is misa b'dei shamayim, premature death, and he doesn't want you to die, and therefore he'll take it seriously, and he'll tell you the truth. And if he assures you that you can eat it, then you can rely upon him. There is a sheet in the Rishalmi, which is the Chachamim, that disagree with this. However, the halacha is like Shimon Shazuri, that you can rely on the Am Haaretz, who assures you that the trumas ma'aser was taken the first time, and therefore your food isn't ruined when the truma ma'aser of demai falls back in the second time. Maseches Demai, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Beis, 4:2. Here we have one more example of a extenuating circumstance in which the rabbis were lenient regarding eating demai, when there are assurances that it in fact has been tithed properly. This case is quite an unusual case. It's a case where you have two friends, Reuven and Shimon, and let's say Reuven is making a chas, he's marrying off his son, and he invites Shimon to the Sheva Brachas, let's say, and it's on Shabbos, and now Shimon doesn't trust Reuven's tithing, so he wants to decline the offer, but Reuven sort of forces him to come by expressing how deeply, mortally offended he would be if Shimon didn't come, and Reuven says that if you don't come, then either I'm making a literal neder that none of my stuff will ever, you know, you'll never eat by me again, none of my stuff will be mutter to you again, as if it were a korban, or according to the Rambam, it's not a neder, it's actually a shvua. He basically swears, you know, it's now or never. If you don't eat by me now, then never again will we eat together, etc. So then what can Shimon do? The Mishnah says, Hamader es chavero sheyochal etzlo. If a person, Reuven, makes a neder, puts under neder Shimon that Shimon must eat by Reuven, saying, you know, neder saying, if it's not now that you don't eat by me for this wedding feast meal, then you'll never be able to eat by me ever again. The point is here that Reuven's expressing how severely he'll be offended. And that being the case, we don't want to have such animosity between Jewish people, so we're going to allow for such an extreme case for a bit of a leniency. If v'hu eno mamino ala maestris, if Shimon doesn't trust Reuven regarding maestris, so then Shimon is basically stuck. But there's a one-time leniency. Ochal imo b'shabbat harishona. We will allow, the rabbis do allow, Shimon to eat at that wedding feast for Shimon's son. Vafopi she'eno mamino ala maestris, even though Shimon doesn't trust that Reuven would tithe properly, provided that, ublavad she'yomalo, provided that Reuven assures him that musarnhen, that the food is indeed properly tithed. So this is a one-off leniency where we're saying, even though in the previous case we were sort of, in the previous Mishnah we were allowing a person only after the fact, where he was stuck, here even before the fact, and Shimon is sort of going into it knowing he's going to have problems or concerns because he doesn't trust Reuven on his maestros, Shimon can rely on Reuven's assurances this one time because the rabbis were concerned to have real animosity between Reuven and Shimon. However, that's a one-time deal. U'b'shabbat shnia, if there's a second week's, it's called Sheva Brachas, the truth is the Gemara has like wedding feasts that have like a din of a wedding feast up to 30 days after the wedding. So if it's one of those, so there's like a second time around, and once again, Reuven says, if you don't come to me the second time, then again, I'm going to make a neder or shvu against you. Too bad. Afal pi shenader memenu hanaya, even if Reuven says, Shimon, if you don't eat by the Suda at me to celebrate, then forevermore you'll never have any benefit from me. It doesn't matter. Lo yochel ad she aser. Shimon cannot come unless he ensures that somehow the food is properly tithed. He can't rely on Reuven's assurances a second time. Maseches Tamai, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Gimel, 4-3. This Mishnah has a number of interpretations. In the Mefarshim, I'm going to say just according to the Bartanura, as is the policy here. The Mishnah is discussing the case of Tamai and the obligation to at least be kore shame, to designate verbally Maiser Ani. Maiser Ani is the tithe that goes to the poor person. You'll recall that in the seven-year cycle, there are two mini cycles of 3 years each. So those years 1, 2, 3 is one mini cycle. Year 4, 5, 6 is a second mini cycle. And then year 7 is a Shemitah year, and there's no tithe taken whatsoever. So in each of those two mini 3 year cycles, the first 2 years, there is a Maiser Sheni tithe. And in the third year, there's a Maiser Ani tithe. Maiser Sheni is the food where its value goes to Jerusalem. And the Maiser Ani is that second tithe after Maaser Rishon, and is given to poor people. So up to now in the Masech, we've focused on the fact that the Maaser Sheni, that second tithe, must be removed. The Kedusha must be removed from the Demai and put on coins, and those coins can go to Jerusalem. Now we're discussing the question of what's with the Maaser Ani, the tithe that goes to poor people. Now, when it comes to Maaser Ani, once it's been separated from the Demai, there's no intrinsic prohibition of eating the Maaser Ani beyond the fact that it may not belong to you, it may belong to a poor person. But the rule is always, Hamotzim Chaver or Lavaraya, in monetary matters, the burden of proof is on the one who wants to exact the property from the person who's currently the Muchzik, who has possession of it. So here, you've purchased your Demai, you're the Muchzik, you have possession of it. If the Ani, the poor person, wants to extract it from you and say you owe him that tithe, he has to bring proof that the Demai wasn't tithed properly. Until then, you are allowed to keep it and eat it. So there's no problem with separating the Maaser Ani and just eating it yourself. The question is, you need to actually at least verbally designate it as distinct from the rest of the food. That's called Kriya Shem. Literally, that means Kore Shem is to call it a name, to give it a name, meaning to verbally designate that 10% of the food after the first 10% that went to Maaser Rishon and then the Trumas Maaser, is the second 10% that's going to be Maaser Ani. Must one do that? Now, according to the Bart Tanura, food that has Maaser Ani mixed into it prior to Kriya Shem, prior to designation of the Maaser Ani being distinct, carries with it a Misa B'dei Shemaim, a premature death penalty. And therefore, things are quite severe. But according to the Bart Tanura, the Amhei Aretz, the regular people who aren't Ne'eman, aren't relied upon regarding their tithing, still were careful regarding at least Kriya Shem, the verbal designation of the Maaser Ani in those years, because they don't want to poison the food supply and cause premature death to people. They just kept it for themselves, according to the Bar Tanura. So they were Kore Shem, they designated Maaser Ani, and they just ate it themselves, or gave it away, but it doesn't make a difference. The point is they didn't leave the Maaser Ani still undesignated. So therefore, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ein Adam Tzarech Likro Shem LeMaaser Ani Shel Demai. Rabbi Eliezer holds, there's no need to even make a verbal designation of the Maaser Ani in the food, because since the Amhei Aretz understand that they must make such a verbal designation, or when they sell the food, claiming it's been tithed, they're essentially poisoning and causing premature death to the purchaser, so they can be relied upon to at least verbally declare the Maaser Ani separate. And therefore, no need for the purchaser to make a second declaration of Maaser Ani when he purchases Demai. However, the Chacham Omrim Kore Shem Be'en Tzarech LaHafrish, the Chacham say, no, you must at least do verbal designation of the Maaser Ani. There's no need to actually physically separate it because of its Hamotzim Mechaver Lavaraya. There's like a, you know, the burden of proof is on the poor person to claim it's his. But since it costs you, the purchaser of the Demai, nothing to do a verbal designation, you must do it just in case, because, so to speak, better safe than sorry. Even though most Amhei Aretz are good about taking off Maaser Ani, since it costs the purchaser nothing to just verbally designate it as Maaser Ani, he must do that. And that is the halach, like the Chacham, one must at least verbally designate the Maaser Ani as such. Maseches Demai, Perek Daled, Mishnah Daled, 4-4. We continue on the topic of Kriya Shem, a verbal designation. This Mishnah has the following question to ask. What happens if you did the verbal designation, the Kriya Shem, which is effectively tithing the food, but you haven't physically removed it? Now, we said on Shabbos, it's prohibited to tithe the food because that's like tikkun, it's like fixing something up, which is an Issur D'Rabbanan, and therefore you'd have to do your tithing before Shabbos. The question is, what happens if you did your verbal designation, effectively doing the tithing, but did not the physical separation, giving the Trumas Maaser to the Kohen or the Maaser Ani to the poor person? So the question is, can you do that on Shabbos? Can you do your Kriya Shem before Shabbos, making your food edible, and then just do the physical giving of the Trumas Maaser or the to the Kohen or the Maaser Ani to the poor person? Is that allowed? And the Mishnah is going to say, no, it's not allowed. And the reason why it's not allowed through the physical gifting to the Kohen is because it is like a Maaser Ani issue, so to speak, that it appears that you are now tithing your food on Shabbos, and we don't want people to get that impression. Therefore, we will forbid you from giving that food to the Kohen. If it's Trumas Maaser that had been separated before Shabbos, it doesn't matter. And same goes if you did the Kriya Shem, the verbal designation of the Maaser Ani. You can't give that food to the Ani on Shabbos because it looks like you're tithing your food on Shabbos, which is no good. It looks bad. Therefore, the Mishnah says, Mishakar Shem LeTrumas Maaser Shel Demai. If a person verbally designated the Trumas Maaser of his Demai, Ula Maaser Ani Shel Vade, or if he verbally designated Maaser Ani from his Vade, from a certain untied produce. The reason we pick those two cases, because those are the likely cases, meaning, for example, one wouldn't ever be giving Maaser Ani of Damai, and one wouldn't be giving, let's say, Maaser Rishon of a Levi on Shabbos, because the Maaser Rishon itself is inedible since it has Trumas Maaser, has to be removed still, and that, of course, you can't do on Shabbos, etc. So the Mishnah picks the two practical cases where it could happen. And Paskins, Lo Yitlam B'Shabbos. Even though you did the verbal designation before Shabbos, you can't give the physical separation and giving to the Kohen or the poor person as appropriate on Shabbos because it looks bad. However, V'mahaya Kohen O Ani Lamudim L'Echol Etzlo. If this Kohen or this poor person was a regular at this Balabais' house, and therefore it doesn't look funny that the Kohen's coming for dinner, you're just going to give him food. And he eats by you, so nothing suspicious there. So then, can you give him as his dinner the truma or the trumas maaser, I should say, or the maaser ani is appropriate? So then, yes, yavo v'yochlu, the kohen or the ani or both can come and eat by the bal habayis ublvad shiodiem. There's only one requirement, which is, and we've sidestepped the maaser ani issue because it doesn't look funny since they're regulars. But still, there's a separate issue. If you don't tell the Kohen that this is Trumas Maaser, or the Ani, this is Maaser Ani, so then the Kohen or Ani will think you're, so to speak, doing him the favor of having him as a guest, and he'll be incurring like a social debt. So the Kohen feels like, so to speak, he has to invite the Baal HaBayis next week to his house for dinner. In effect, what's happening is that the Baal HaBayis is using Trumas Maaser, or Maaser Ani, to his own benefit, economic benefit, and that's forbidden. And therefore, you have to put, to avoid this kind of gnevas das issue, you have to put the Kohen on notice and say, you're eating dinner, but the dinner you're getting from me is actually Trumas Maaser, so I'm not doing any favors, especially, and same goes with the Ani, you tell him it's Maaser Ani, it's not my food you're eating, it's your own food that was entitled to you anyways, and then you haven't done any gnevas das, and that is acceptable. Meseches Damai, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hay, 4-5, fascinating Mishnah. We had said on the one hand that the reason why the Am Haaretz is not relied upon regarding his tithing is not because he's a liar, but simply because he doesn't really appreciate the nuances of the tithing process, and therefore we don't trust him necessarily just because he says it was tithed properly, and we have reason to believe he didn't do it right. On the other hand, we have a general principle, which is if a person is not believed to do something properly with respect to himself, so you can't rely upon him for your own purposes, like so to speak, we'll call it the hypocrite rule. If a person isn't strict about something for himself, you can't rely upon him to be strict for you. So here the case is a fascinating setup. We put those two principles at loggerheads and we say, what happens if you ask your friend who isn't Naaman to go and purchase for you from someone who is Naaman? On the one hand, do we say he's not a liar and you can believe him? Or on the other hand, do we say, listen, since not properly tithed food is presumably good enough for him, he'll just give that to you anyways and mess you up, and therefore you shouldn't rely upon him. And therefore the Mishnah says, Ha'omer l'misha eino ne'eman al ha'maisras. If you request from someone who's not relied upon regarding maisras, and you say, Kachli m'misha hu ne'eman u misha hu ma'aser, you say, please go and purchase some food for me at the market and get it from someone who can be relied upon regarding trumas and maisras. There is a double lashon here. It's repetitive. It says ne'eman. It says mimishu ne'eman and also mishu ma'aser. There's a question why the double lashon. What's the difference between the two cases being ne'eman and being one who ma'asers? And there are different pshatim given. None of them really change the pshat in the Mishnah, and the Bar Tanur doesn't even address the issue. So let's just say one pshat and leave it at that, which is, let's say, ne'eman regarding tumah and tahara and ma'aser regarding the proper tithing. There are other pshatim. The point is, you've asked your eino ne'eman friend, your friend who's not relied upon with respect to his own food to be tithed, to purchase food for you from someone who is relied upon, and he comes back and says, I did what you asked. Can you rely upon him, your friend, to purchase the food from a salesperson who you would have trusted? The answer is no, you cannot. Eino ne'aman. The friend who went to pick the stuff up for you can't be relied upon because the fear is he'll just pick it up from anybody, and then if you kind of call him out on it and catch him, he'll say, oh, well, as far as I was concerned, that person is Naaman, that person is reliable. If you don't want to be relying upon him, that's your problem, but I think he is reliable. So since he can't really be, he can wiggle out of the awkward situation and sort of the reputational jeopardy he's in, You can't rely upon him. However, since if you kind of can pin him down and say, Me'ish Ploni, you tell your friend, please pick up bread for me at such and such a bakery. And that being the case, you've specified exactly where the food should be purchased. And if your friend claims he did it, he kind of will be, you know, caught out in the lie tomorrow when you go to the bakery and say, oh, that was delicious bread my friend bought from you yesterday. Since a person is, you know, careful not to lose his reputation in such a case, Hareza Ne'eman, you then can rely on the friend who's Einu Ne'eman to purchase the food on your behalf, because he's not going to lie explicitly and he's not going to find a way to wiggle out of it, because, you know, he's attesting to you that he did purchase from a particular place which you requested. Now, the Mishnah says a fascinating middle case. What happens if you tell him, your friend, please purchase for me bread from a particular bakery, which is relied upon regarding tithes? And halach likach mimenu, he goes to do your bidding and buy from that particular bakery. But then, Vamar lo, when he comes back, he says, lo matzas, if I couldn't find that particular bakery open, but I got it from some other person who is equally reliable regarding tithing. So can you rely upon him then? The answer is, no, you can't. Because again, if it would have been a particular bakery, you could have called him out. But now that he's saying it's someone else who's Ne'eman, if you essentially call him out on it, he again will have that wiggle room and say, oh, I made a mistake regarding who I bought it from, and I didn't realize, and it was reliable to me, etc. And therefore, you cannot rely upon his testimony if it's not from a particular person where his particular reputation is on the line. Consistent with that, the Rajah paskens that if you would tell your friend, buy from me bread from someone who's Ne'eman, but you don't specify who, but when your friend comes back, he says, I bought it from such and such a baker, he specifies a particular baker, and that baker is Ne'eman, then you can rely on your friend, because he sort of put his reputation on the line. He specified who he bought it from, and he can get caught out in the lie. And since a person wouldn't allow himself to lose his reputation over it and get caught out, and he can be believed. That at least is how the Rajba paskins. Maseches Demai, Perek Daled, Mishnah Vav, 4-6. Fascinating Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Anichnas la'ir. If a person visits a city, Veinu makir adam sham, but he doesn't know anybody there. So he has the problem of needing to purchase food, but not knowing who he can trust regarding the tithes. So normally the rule is, as we established in the previous Mishnayos, that if a person is not formally accepted upon himself to be a Ne'eman, reliable regarding tithes, then he can't be relied upon. But here the Mishnah has a leniency, and this leniency is being driven by the fact that a person who's traveling is presumably short on cash, and therefore we don't want to make him have to tithe unnecessarily so that he can preserve his money as much as possible. So the Mishnah says, such a person, Amar, if he says, mi kan ne'eman, mi kan ma'aser, who here is reliable, and who here tithes properly? It's a discussion in the Mefarshim why the double language, the difference between being ne'eman and being someone who is ma'aser properly. The Bar Tanur doesn't make a fuss of it, so ostensibly he doesn't look at it as being significant. There are different pshatim. Perhaps ne'eman means ne'eman regarding tumas and tara, etc. But for our purposes, it makes no difference. The point is that the person is asking, the out-of-towner is asking, where he can buy properly tithed foods. Amelo echad. If a person in the marketplace says, ani, he says, you can trust me, I tithe properly. Einu ne'eman, that person has no ne'emanus, he has no special believability because he's just an amaretz ostensibly who hasn't taken this proper commitment, and therefore his food is demai like anybody else's. However, amelo, if instead the person in the marketplace says to our out-of-towner, ish ploni ne'eman, there's a person over there and he can be relied upon. He's the guy where everyone, you know, shops from to get their properly tithed produce. Hareze Ne'eman. The person in the marketplace who is giving assurances about another person can be relied upon, as if he were, so to speak, an independent third party. And therefore, our out-of-towner can rely upon his assurance and go to that other person to whom he was referred to buy food, and it can rely on the assurance of the first person who he encountered, who assured our out-of-towner that this salesman sells properly tithed foods. Now again, under normal circumstances, that would never fly. But here the rabbis are being lenient because we want this traveler, who presumably is short on cash and has limited resources, to be able to save as much money as possible. The mission continues on now, even more interestingly. If after our out-of-towner goes to the first person requesting a referral, and he gets referred to the second person. And now he actually buys, let's say, his, you know, wine from the second person. Halach likach imenu. He buys that wine. Amar lo. And then our out-of-towner says to this second person, let's call him, you know, the wine merchant, Mikan mocher yashan. Who here sells yashan? Now, the word yashan literally means old. And according to the Bar Tanur, referring to the mitzvah of yashan as opposed to chadash, which requires that New Year's grain can't be eaten until after the Korban Omer has been brought, or after the 16th of Nisan, as the case may be. So before that, it's forbidden to be eaten. So the question here, according to the Bar Tanura, is where can I find grain that has not just been properly tithed, but also is from last year's crop and therefore permitted to be eaten? And that's the Bar Tanura's pshat. There are other pshatim. Many object to that and understand yashin here means just old, meaning quality, seasoned produce. But we'll go with the Bar Tanura for now. Where can I go to find yashan, so to speak, kosher wheat? Now, Amarlo, the second person, meaning that wine salesman who is referred from the first person, who let's say is, you know, the baker, if the wine merchant says you can rely on that baker, as the Mishnah says, Amarlo, mi sheshalacha etli, that baker who sent you to me in the first place, he can be relied upon to sell you yashin, go buy your bread stuff from him. Afal pishen kagomlin, even though it seems that they are in cahoots, one with the other, meaning, you know, first the baker referred our out-of-towner to the wine merchant, and then the wine merchant referred back to the baker. So it seems suspicious. Nevertheless, hare elu ne'amanim, since each one is, you know, stands on his own merit, and we have this leniency that the rabbis put in the first place, we can rely on both of their referrals, even though it looks a little bit suspicious. And that will be the halacha. Maseches Dumai, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Zayin, 4-7. We start this Mishnah with a joke. You have two fellows sitting at the on the stairs at the entrance to a church. One is very obviously a devout Christian, and the other a clearly a Hasidic Jew. And they're both panhandling, they're begging. As people come in and out of the church, they're begging them for alms. So, as one might imagine, the Christians that are going into the church are rather unimpressed that there's a Hasidic Jew begging on their stairs, and therefore they sort of look at him with disdain, and they, you know, often to spite him or whatever the case may be, they give to the extra to the other devout Christian sitting at his side, the Christian beggar. In any case, after a while, one well-meaning Christian says to this Hasidic Jew, says, you know, it's sort of an affront and sort of insensitive to be sitting like this and collecting as you are. If you're serious about collecting for the church, I suggest you sort of dress down and don't make such statements about your religion. So the one beggar turns to the other beggar and says, hey, Moishi, what do you think about this guy telling us how we're running our business? That's the pshat in this Mishnah. The case of the Mishnah is you have two itinerant peddlers, chamarim, donkey drivers, and shenichnesu le'ir. They both show up in the city, and one is uncertain whether or not they can be relied upon regarding tithes. Amar Echad, but one of them says, Shali chadash v'shal chaver yashan. My stuff is chadash, meaning it's not allowed to be eaten. But shal chaverai, the other fellow, his stuff is yashan, his stuff is permissible. That's how the Bar Tanur learns of shot here. Shali einu masukan, my stuff isn't tithed, but v'shal chaveri masukan, but my friend's stuff is tithed. And you can rely upon him. So the Allah says, einu ne'manin. Unlike the previous Mishnah, where we said you could rely upon the testimony of one person who's vouching for a second person, in the previous Mishnah's extenuating circumstances, in this scenario, there certainly is no such leniency, and you cannot rely upon the assurances of one about the other, if for no other reason than the fact that they're obviously in cahoots. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever that if two people are competitors, that one person would denigrate his wares and encourage you to buy from his competitor. It makes no sense whatsoever, and therefore clearly they're running some kind of scam and they're in collusion. So you can't rely upon one assurance regarding the other. Now, in the previous Mishnah, this only got off the ground in the first place because of a leniency. We felt that because there were no other options for the out-of-towner, so he had to rely on somebody, so we let him rely on the assurances of what seemed to be hopefully an independent third party, but maybe not, even after the fact when the second one seemed like he was in cahoots with the first one. They were like Kogomlin. They were like, one was first Mr. A referred the out-of-towner to Mr. B, and then Mr. B referred the out-of-towner back to Mr. A. Since they looked like they were in cahoots, it didn't matter. We still relied upon them. But here, it shouldn't even get off the ground, because if this is happening in your own hometown, one might think there's no reason to avail himself to leniency if relying on a third party and regarding tithing. But that's not the case. And the reason why is because in the time of the Mishnah, the supply chain wasn't as robust as nowadays. You couldn't just go to one of 10 different supermarkets to find what you're looking for. The people of the town relied upon these, you know, peddlers to come and bring food supplies. And without those peddlers, there would be disruption, and perhaps, you know, the food supply would be jeopardized, and it could cause trouble for the locals. So that's why you might have thought that there'd be reason to be lenient. And in fact, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ne'emanan. Rabbi Yehuda actually says one actually can rely on one with respect to the other, meaning if there are two peddlers, one can rely on the first regarding the second. Even though he agrees that it looks rather fishy, Rabbi Yehuda feels one's options are limited, because if we wouldn't rely on the kashrus of these peddlers, saying their stuff, for argument's sake, is chadash, and therefore we wouldn't buy from them, so then they'll stop selling to us, and then no one will have to bring us supplies. And of course, that would be a net loss, bad news for the locals, and we avail ourselves of this leniency because the alternative is much worse. However, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. It's like the Tanna Kamma, that we don't trust these people because they're obviously running a scam, and we will find a way, one or the other, to get food from another more legitimate and reliable source.